welcome to this, the 21st episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday the 17th of July, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community, and if you're listening live, you can send us messages or abuse or rude comments using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week are a triumvirate of warm human beings in all senses of the word. It's Alan.
Hello.
It's Mark.
Hello.
And it's Laura.
Hello.
Wow, how are we doing, chaps?
Diggity-boo.
Yeah, yep. It's nice and sunny outside and a bit too warm in here, but, you know, I'm not going to complain too much, lest it go away.
I think your air conditioning is on the blink, Tony.
I've closed the door, if that's what you mean.
The back door is still open.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, well, before we get too sweaty, let's get on with the news.
We have some news. First up, the Department of Education has leaked, or has had a letter leaked to them that they've sent to top four ISPs. So I'll get
what
that
is,
out.
What does the letter contain?
Specific requests, in quotes here, from Downing Street regarding content filtering.
Okay. Yes.
The news story I read said they were demands, but then I looked at the actual text of the letter and it said they were specific requests.
Oh.
Which is a very different thing.
Yes. So this is to do with like filtering naughty content by default on broadband connections from, I think it's BT, TalkTalk, Virgin and the other one.
Sky,
yes.
Probably.
The other one.
Has there been any feedback from any of those ISPs that say whether they're
apparently
to do
they were quite unhappy because they're basically being, you know, asked nicely that they need to do these things and change the language they've been using to make things basically sound like they're meeting the government's goals when in fact they're just what's already happening. So things like basically they currently have this system called Active Choice Plus, which is a
that sounds something I really want.
It sounds positive and warm and embracing.
Which I think the idea is that you have the option to have some default filters set for you, whereas what the government are specifically requesting is that essentially every ISP sets up a captive portal, so the first time you connect, it comes up with a screen saying, you know, would you like these filters box ticked by default? And it changed, and they changed all of the marketing to call it default on filtering, which is what Downing Street want. So never mind actually, you know, teaching parents about what's on the internet or getting parents to teach their kids about what's on the internet. Just leave this box ticked and all the bad stuff goes away.
And all the stuff that we actually might want them to be able to see or the children might want to be able to see gets blocked along with it.
Yeah, I know.
Terrible. Trust the government.
Yes.
It's all fine.
They have our best interest at heart, clearly.
It says here.
In this specific request we got from the government.
Stormfly, the Kickstarter-funded bootable Ubuntu USB stick that goes on your wrist, has run into trouble.
Yeah, they shipped a bunch of these, didn't they,
yes.
to customers. They were quite well-backed.
Yeah.
And, yes, they've had some problems with
it seems they've been let down by their manufacturer. Essentially, they thought they were getting to ship and what they looked at and tested wasn't what actually got shipped in the end.
It always looked a bit strange because it was basically a cheap USB stick that would go on your wrist that had Ubuntu pre-installed on it with a couple of extra packages, and that really was it.
And it seems like it was an even cheaper USB stick than we ever imagined.
Yeah, maybe they were trying to cut a bit of corners with the they say they didn't.
And the USB sticks on your wrist aren't a new idea, so you'd have thought that bit would get it right.
Oh, it's not the fact that it's on your wrist that's the problem. It's the bit inside the...
Something's thinner than it should be or something, so it doesn't connect properly or it stops connecting after a few goes. Mm. And basically people who've got them have said they're not working. So they're now trying to. They've actually been very good at communicating what's going on, and there's a sort of community guy they've got as well who's been I can't remember his name, but he's
Niall.
Yes, he's been relentlessly posting.
Yeah, he's posted more comments on Kickstarter than anyone I've ever seen before.
Yeah, he's like helping people out with technical problems and trying to keep people up to date with all of the other issues as well.
And a lot of these are like Ubuntu kind of support questions, like, you know, how do I boot into
what's
this?
What's the difference between 32 and 64-bit and all sorts of stuff like that.
Wow, bizarre. So they've aimed low and failed to deliver, but good luck to them.
Yes. Sarah Sharp, a developer at Intel, has been standing up for abuse on the Linux kernel mailing list.
Standing up against abuse, perhaps.
Probably. That's probably better.
So, anyone who's ever read the Linux kernel mailing list will know exactly what she's talking about. Every now and then, someone will submit a patch, and the person who's approving the patch, very often Linus Torvalds, will get very angry at something not being done the right way and will use very colourful language, often quite intimidating, quite unpleasant language. So
what's she calling for?
She's basically calling for that to stop, I think.
Right.
She more sort of, you know, these are people who are working together and it's supposed to be a professional group of people developing professionally, not people getting angry and swearing at each other all the time. And it doesn't exactly create a welcoming environment. If I wanted to start submitting patches for the kernel, I'd be worried that people would just be shouting me down all the time because I didn't know what I was doing.
So let's be clear. When people are getting abused for doing something wrong, what sort of abuse are we talking about? I'm not saying any of it's right, but...
Well, a lot of the stuff is stuff I couldn't say on the show, but, you know, suggesting things
are
which...
we talking kind of racial abuse?
No. I mean, none of it is what I would call discriminatory. It's okay. Just unpleasant. Not the kind of thing that you'd want your boss to be saying to you.
If it was your boss in the workplace, there'd probably be some kind of conversation you'd have with the human remains department or whatever.
So calling somebody a bleeping idiot.
Yes, yeah, and sort of what the bleep were you thinking? I can't bleeping believe you even sent this to me, you bleeping bleep, that sort of thing.
I notice we're not using our professional bleep here, for some reason. There we go.
There we go.
But this, it's not just Linus. It's not just Linus has a pop at people. There's, you know, some of the other conversations where it seems part of the culture of LKML is... You know, other people suggest, oh, well, you know, you should beat them down or you should use a bigger stick or, you know, that kind of imagery that's given.
Aggressive.
Yeah, that kind of aggressive imagery that's given, you know, in order to get someone in line when they're, you know, out of line by doing something incorrect for whatever reason.
Yeah, and there's a lot of the people who have sort of argued against, Sarah's point, are saying, oh, you know, this is how... the kernel team get so many patches through because they're really busy and they don't have time to give reasoned responses. If something pisses them off, they're just going to shout at someone, and that's how they get so much work done. So that's excusable.
But they have time to write sweary rants.
Yeah, some of the sweary rants are quite long. In fact,
I'm sure they're therapeutic. But yes, it's an interesting shift, isn't it, from the kind of community effort where it's just a bunch of people rubbing along, perhaps not very nicely together, towards a more professional environment where people are expected to have courtesy and respect and at least kind of aspire to some sort of ideals.
It's also got wider visibility.
Yeah.
You know, in days gone by, the only people who read and wrote to or contributed to LKML were, you know, a small set of very intense geeks, and now it's got a lot more visibility and people report on, you know, any little conversation that happens on LKML, and every time Linus blows up or every time there's, you know, some controversial thing like a strange hex code that Microsoft used or there's a lot more focus on LKML now than there ever was before. So it's bubbled up a lot more. I'm not saying it's more prevalent, but it's just more visible.
And it's not just being more professional, it's just being more civil in like you would be in everyday life. I mean, it's generally frowned upon to go and shout at somebody because they've parked too close to your car or something. I mean, you might want to do it.
But the problem is
that it's frowned upon.
Different people have different rules in social engagement rules.
That's my point, really.
And Linus has defended, you know, his actions and said that he the reasons why he does this, and you know, he gets more efficient work done, and you know, that's the way he works, and there you go.
Yeah.
It looks like there's going to be a conversation about this at the next Colonel Summit, and there, it has been discussed at previous Colonel Summits as well, but whether they can get any kind of, I don't know, I hate to say it, code of conduct for the Colonel mailing list, and whether they'll get buy-in from, you know, the people who contribute, or whether those people will just avoid each other, you know.
Wow. Watch this space. Tennessee lawyer Chris Sevier has filed a lawsuit against Apple because he was able to access porn on his iPhone.
Wow.
This is a bizarre story to the maximum degree.
He claims that he's been so damaged by the pornography he viewed that he can no longer distinguish between porn and genuine intercourse.
Wow.
One's on TV and one's not.
How much did he have to watch to figure that out?
I don't know. It's quite a lot, maybe, yeah. I'd have thought.
So this isn't some app or some malware that got on his phone. This was him going, opening his iPhone, going to Safari and searching on the web, which is on all the other devices as well.
Yeah, yes. But isn't this mainly because the Apple App Store is a curated store where if you made an app that surfaced that kind of content very easily, it would just get rejected from the store.
Yeah.
But is the point that he's actually going for the fact that Safari doesn't have that, and Safari is age-rated 17 and above or whatever, so in effect, Safari is exempt from the rules that every other software developer has to abide by to get in the Apple Store, and that's installed by default on your phone?
Interesting.
Yeah. Because it's a browser.
Yeah, sure. But then again, you know, you could write an app which is a porn browser. You could write an app which is a porn browser, and it would get rejected. Yes. But because Safari has the capacity to visit other stuff as well.
Yeah, and you've got a camera on your phone which you can use to take pictures of people's nether regions.
Yeah.
Very delicate.
I think this is more highlighting the hypocrisy of having a curated store where you are exempt from the rules, whereas someone else who develops an app has to abide by these rules, and you know, your app is exempt.
I can't imagine his argument flies, though.
No, so he's claiming that because you can access porn without any warning through the iPhone's browser, Safari, Apple is illegally distributing pornography, according to Tennessee law.
Oh, yeah, there is some law he cites from Tennessee about distributing pornography, and apparently distributing a phone with a web browser on which has access to the internet, he argues, counts.
So he wants all the phones shipped in safe mode.
Yes.
To Tennessee.
This is Active Choice Plus default on, yes, right. Please, government.
They make them, basically. They make them shelter. They have sheltered lives down in Tennessee.
God, I hope we don't have any listeners there.
Can you buy guns with an iPhone in Tennessee?
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
Probably buy a gun with an iPod interface on it. But yes, how do you ever get trained as a lawyer without... Anyway, he's a lawyer. I'm not going to say nasty things.
Finally, GitHub has addressed most of the software on the site being published without a license.
Well, they've not addressed it directly, but they're addressing the issue.
Okay, so this has been raised by a number of people that it's a Wild West where you could commonly fork someone else's project and not actually know what license the original project was, and then you might redistribute it and then find that you're actually in breach of some license that you didn't know.
You might publish something thinking people can take it and do what they want, I don't care about a license, without realizing that actually means that you're not giving anyone a license, and you're basically saying all rights reserved.
So this is the same kind of argument against public domain.
Domain is different. Public domain says I don't care about my copyright, people can do whatever they want with it. No conditions. Whereas in this case,
I thought the FSF were against using public domain because it wasn't explicit enough what you could do with it.
Because it doesn't
have the copyleft compulsion for you to share what you're doing with it.
Right.
So they would disagree with it for the same reason they disagree with the BSD license. But what's happening here is people are publishing it with no license whatsoever, which in most jurisdictions, copyright law means if you don't have a license on it, it's all rights reserved by default.
Right.
So, people don't. Oh, right. Yeah.
So what they've got now is when you create a repository on GitHub, you have an option to choose a license, and they have a choosealicense.com website.
Nice. Didn't someone make one of those back in the days of Lug Radio?
Yes.
They talked about it on the show, yeah, and then someone actually created a thing that says, I'm creating content, click here. Mm. It's I want to be able to share it, click here. And then you click through a few questions and it says, here's the license for you.
Is Creative like, Commons like that? Does that.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
It's quite similar to Creative. So it's got three, like it has, I just want to share stuff, which it says use the MIT license. I'm worried about patents, in which case it says use the Apache license, and I care about contributions being shared, in which case it says use the GPL. And then you can click through to a list of some other common licenses where it gives you a sort of a little traffic light system of what it compels you to do, allows you to do, and forbids for each license, which is quite good. And that's you know, useful. It's you not know, too complicated
GitHub or
legally.
No, that's a useful
yes,
tool.
Exactly. And yeah, you can also select the license through the GitHub interface, and I guess that means it puts the license file in there for you.
Of course, if people use Launchpad, this has had a license chooser from the very beginning.
And that supports Git, right? The really popular distributed version control system everyone loves.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's all about the BZR.
Yes, it is.
Mm. So what's next? There is some news to do with games.
Yes, Tony, tell us all about Leadworks.
Yes, Leadworks, I think you'll find it's actually pronounced.
See, I don't know anything. No, Tony knows everything about gaming.
Game development platform has reached its crowdfunding goal for the development of a Linux port.
Oh, what does that mean?
That means they're going to port the development platform to Linux, and then you'll be able to get it on Linux and use the development platform from Leadworks on Linux. That's right. What that means.
To do what?
To develop games.
Will you be doing that?
No.
So what you're trying to say is that you'll be able to develop games for Linux on Linux?
Yes.
Wow.
Cool. The campaign now has a stretch goal to add support of Android and Ouya, which is the little mini cube gaming system that Alan was talking about.
Hey, do you know what? Speaking of Ouya, I had one of those FML moments the other day when I was moving stuff from one room to another. I moved my Ouya from one room to another and I dropped it and it rolled under the sofa.
Ooh.
No, you don't get that with any other console. No other console will roll under your sofa and go out of reach.
Did you bother to get it out again?
Yeah, I did.
Right, okay.
When you said FML, my first thought was, which markup language is that?
Bless.
Yeah, there we go. Is that the end of the gaming news?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content, and that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
And it's time for the community news and events. And to start with, the next UDS is coming up on the 27th and 29th of August.
Wow, these three-month ones come around really quick, don't they?
And so we kind of virtual again, I presume?
Yes.
That means you have to tidy your study, doesn't it?
No, because my study is being converted into a kids' room, so I will have no study.
Right. You'll be sitting there surrounded by toys.
It's funny because...
with your legs crossed.
We keep having hangouts, and recently at work I've been hanging out in the back garden because it's very hot and sunny. And people keep asking me why I've got these strange different backgrounds behind me. And no, I'm just outside. It's very unusual, but sometimes I do go outside. All right.
Lovely mental image of that.
Yeah, sorry.
You hanging out in your back garden.
Christopher House Rogers has blogged about Exmir performance. We mentioned Exmir, I think, in the last episode.
Yes, people were publishing benchmarks.
Yeah, Foronix posted a benchmark where they said it was like 10 to 20%.
So
slower.
Remind us what Exmir does.
Exmir is the thing that lets you run current X applications on top of Mir.
And Mir is the new graphical
server
thing.
Yes. So, okay. Yes. So he's posted some more details. If you ever want to know more about Mir and Exmir, Christopher House Rogers is the best place to go. His blog. He's got loads of information about it.
So is it a new version or a new performance increase?
There is a new version that's just come out, and he's talked a bit about what they're doing to address the performance concerns that have been raised elsewhere.
Okay, cool. And the Ubuntu 13.10 wallpaper contest has been launched.
Is it a contest?
It's a process.
Yeah.
We should interview someone about this.
Yeah. Let's see if we can do that for the next episode.
Okay.
Wow. But for now, what I can tell you is that you can enter via Flickr. There's a Flickr group where you can put your artwork in there. And the competition closes on the 16th of August. So you've got a couple of weeks, I guess, or 3 weeks to get
your... Do you win anything?
I don't think so, but again...
Let's Everyone's see if, a winner. Will
Everyone.
You get the satisfaction of having your artwork included in all of the Ubuntu discs and downloads that are shipped.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty
cool. Is pretty cool.
Not by default. You can't see them by default. That's usually a blobby thing with squiggles on it.
I think you'll find that's called fruit salad.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I've heard it called anyway. The purple and orange.
Yeah, it
and
does look a bit like a fruit salad,
fruit salad,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
The sweet
vomit,
not the...
as one person called it.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I can see that latter one. Yeah, so the option of having that artwork on the CD, on the ISO images, and people can go can look at the available wallpapers and go, oh, I like that one of that flower or that padlock, and install it. And change their wallpaper to be that picture, and it's your picture.
Mm.
Sounds quite cool, really.
Nice.
I need a padlock on my desktop.
Yeah, everybody needs a padlock.
Will you be submitting any photos, Tony?
I probably haven't got time, unfortunately, but
we'll
see.
Does it really take that long?
Wedding rings, bouquets, quite specialist.
I was going to say, that would be a prime opportunity for you to have one watermarked with Tony Whitmore wedding
.com
in the corner.
Yes. Yeah. Well, perhaps if listeners go to the website, Tony Whitmore Wedding.
Submit one of your photos to the contest.
Yeah, if they go to my wedding website, they can see which photos they think might be worth submitting and let me know and I'll give it some thought.
And while you're there, why not check out his generous wedding packages?
Well, Laura, what's the next story?
So, yeah, Canonical have registered a trademark for Ubuntu Edge, which may indicate the branding for the first upcoming Ubuntu smartphone.
Well, well.
Apparently, this is speculation so far.
Right.
So
basically, someone who was digging through trademark registrations.
I love that job.
Lovely. As you do.
Pastime.
No, people do this. It was an Android fan site, and people do just dig through IP registrations for, you know, things which companies are registering, because that gives you a clue. Like with games consoles, it happens all the time. People look through patent registrations from Nintendo, and that gives them a clue about what's going to be in the next Nintendo console.
So when they introduced the Wii and they talked about Bluetooth wireless remotes and things, because before that all remotes were cabled, they were like, ooh, we're going to have wireless remotes for Wii's in the next release or whatever.
Hmm.
So people have done that for Ubuntu phones. Or spotted that there's
been a this isn't a pattern which tells us what's going to be in it, but this is a trademark for Ubuntu Edge, which is in sort of classified in with computing and mobile devices and stuff.
I guess it's interesting because Canonical don't register many trademarks, so
when
it comes up, it's kind of
it?
Like hello.
My first thought was something to do with cell networks.
Cell networks.
Just like edge network thing. I don't know,
edge the network. Oh,
well,
okay.
Whenever my phone, you see a little E on it.
Yeah. And you go, oh, it's not going to be very fast.
Yeah,
is it?
Exactly.
So maybe that branding hasn't worked out very well.
I thought Motorola had a phone called Edge, but then if they did, it probably had a funny spelling with no vowels or something.
The oosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe Ubuntu is going to be sponsored by one of the members of U2.
Ubuntu Bono.
The Ubuntu Adam Clayton. And the Ubuntu, the other one.
Yeah. Ken.
Ubuntu Ken.
Matt Luke and Ken.
It's just a trademark.
Oh no, that was what are they called?
Plastic wife fronts and a trademark.
What? Where did that come from?
The Ubuntu Ken doll.
No, right. I was thinking of Bros.
Yeah.
Luke and Ken.
Do you do that a lot?
Weren't there only two of them?
There are only two, yeah.
No! See? It's the forgotten one.
What the hell?
Moving on.
I thought they were vaguely Aryan. Twins in Bros.
No, there was a third guy.
They were Matt and Luke.
I've got literally no idea what's going on.
That's why they called him Ken.
Are you not thinking of Right Said Fred?
Yeah, there was a third one. He was Rob, though.
Yeah, he was the one with hair.
Honestly, Matt, Luke and Ken.
I don't think there was. I think there were just two of them.
When you sort this out.
Google it.
Right.
Okay.
And not about Ubuntu this week.
Thank you, Mark.
Do you want to tell us, Alan?
No, you.
Okay. Fedora have decided not to install syslog by default, using systemd instead to take over all default
Actually,
logging
that's
duties.
Not quite true. They haven't decided. They're discussing it.
Oh, okay. It sounded, from what I was reading, it sounded like a decision.
But it's almost... It's, yeah, it
is
does,
this like when Canonical discusses things?
Yeah.
How can people say we're biased?
Yeah, well, yes. So Leonard Pottering, of fame from what?
Printing.
Avahi, Pulse Audio, System D, and many other things, has posted a thread on the Fedora mailing list about switching off syslog, because at the moment they produce these binary system logs with systemd, which you can read with a program called journalctl, journal control,
right?
But it also spits out the plain text syslog so that you can tail the log using cat it and whatever. But what they want to do is switch off the ASCII plain text one, so you only get the binary log, so that you then have to use journalctl. And there's been some discussion that, you know, people who vehemently against that because they quite like the ability to read a log file with tail, and Leonard's been pointing out that actually with journalctl you see the same thing in the console, you just have to use this helper program to read your syslog. It's an interesting thread, and you know, though any distro that uses systemd will almost certainly eventually switch to doing this way of logging.
So what's the advantage of using systemd?
So the advantage, well, it's more talking about the logging side, not all the other things that come with systemd. I think there's some things that you can confirm, for example, that the log hasn't been modified by anyone, because that's one way that people, you know, can hide their tracks.
Yeah, because it's just plain text. They can edit a few lines out.
Exactly. They can trim out and eradicate. So there are some advantages. It's also actually a prettier interface when you use journalctl to view the syslog. It colours things in, so it's easier to spot rather than just this big screen full of text. You know, it's actually easier to read, so
presumably it could be more efficient as well. If everything's binary encoded, then you could encode common things in a more efficient way, perhaps.
I don't know, but it, you know, Leonard's a clever guy. You know, he's come up with stuff that's on probably all our machines, so you know, I trust the guy to you know, make decent decisions.
Interesting.
So Alan's right, there was a third member of BROS. He was called Craig.
No, it's Ken.
Or Ken, if you like.
That's the point. Everyone forgets his name. So they
I didn't even know he existed.
Do we have any events?
Poor guy.
Tony?
Before this turns into an episode of Nevermind the Buzzcocks, yes, we've got a couple to tell you about. On the 2nd to the 7th of September at the O2 in London, there will be Campus Party Europe.
I was reading about this today. I was trying to work out what it was. I got an email from someone telling me to go. It looks like basically a big tech event of some sort.
Yes, it's an annual week-long 24-hours-a-day technology festival where thousands of campuseros, unfortunately you might have to call yourself that to get in, which they loosely define as hackers, developers, gamers and technophiles, equipped with laptops, camp on-site and immerse themselves in a truly unique environment. So if you've ever wanted to sleep at the O2, and who hasn't, to be honest, yeah, this is your opportunity to do it.
Brilliant.
It sounds like fun.
It does.
So you can
like
go
fun.
To campus-party.eu to find out more.
There's one other event to mention, and that is OggCamp.
Yay! Yep.
19th and 20th of October at Liverpool John Moore University in Liverpool.
Yes.
We should probably organise that.
Yeah, we keep mentioning it. Nothing for people to do other than save the date in their diaries at the moment, unless they want to volunteer to be a member of the crew. But yeah, save your date in your calendars. We'll have announcements about hotels and tickets and things, hopefully before too long.
Yes.
Maybe even a website.
Ooh.
You never know. But yeah, stay tuned for more.
And that's all that is.
That's all for this episode. Join us next time when we're going to interview Ian Farrell about the 1310 wallpaper competition.
You organised that quickly.
Well, we like to be responsive to things that come up on this show.
Yeah.
We're also going to be reading your feedback, and we're going to be making your life just a little bit easier with some command line love, or maybe avoiding some big problems with some command line hate. I'm not too sure.
Groovy.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much indeed for listening, everybody. We're going to open the doors now, let some heat out of this room, and join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.